it can really help the Bills. Like, they need a high-volume guy. They had it in Stephon Diggs. Now you're in the middle of a season where we came in talking about all these veterans that really hadn't necessarily reached their full potential or had injury concerns elsewhere, and it's like the Bills are hoping that one or two of these guys are really going to flourish. This cast could work if you're ahead in every game. You can play with these guys if you're playing from ahead. The problem is when you're behind or in a late-game situation, Tom, where you need a 20-yard ball, you're not getting it from these guys. I mean, listen, Keon Coleman had a 49-yard catch, and that's great, but that was his only catch of the day. As I continue to watch the Bills, it's like we said, they didn't do enough to replace Diggs, and they haven't, and they still haven't. I understand there's a lot of obstacles to get Davante Adams to Buffalo, but to me, that's the spot for the team that needs him the most.
Mike Garofolo on Davante Adams. So, good morning, Jeremy and Joe. Happy Tuesday, October 8th. Chiefs won last night. They beat the Saints. And I don't know if we're on Davante Adams' watch again. I think we still are. Kay Adams. So, Joe, she does a show with Davante Adams weekly?
I guess he's a weekly guest.
Okay, yeah. Weekly guest on Hey Kay Adams. And she tweeted last night a lot going on with him that he wasn't going to be on.
Mm-hmm. And stay tuned.
Yes.
With the eyeball emojis.
What are the odds he plays on Monday?
This, by the way, happened yesterday. I believe there was a report that the Raiders want this deal done sooner rather than later.
That makes sense.
The verbiage that was used.
You think he'll play on Monday? One of these two teams? I mean, it's the Jets and the Bills. And the Saints are going the wrong direction. I mean, he might want to go help them there, but I mean, it's not like the Saints have Chris Olave and they're not getting him the ball that much.
Right.
His brother tweeted.
So that was the thing. So remember when Diggs' brother tweeted and everyone got up in arms about it?
Yeah, I have to trade him.
Chris Olave's brother calls out Saints after quiet first half against the Chiefs. Called out the organization for not using his brother enough.
He just tweeted one target question mark.
Was that what the call out was?
That's what it was. Okay. One target. It was like halfway through the game. So the rules are they have to trade Olave now.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
I mean, you wanted them to get him already.
Sure.
A month ago.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not exactly sure how he'd be available. But
he would only become available if their season were to completely derail.
Yes. And they weren't going to pay him.
And they were going to completely rebuild. And even then, they might do it because, remember, I thought that might happen to Justin Jefferson. Right. What happened? He just signed, and their team's actually really good now. That's part of, by the way, the Cooper formula is the Browns look horrific. And if their season derails, which it is currently derailing, like the train is halfway off the tracks, then they have no use for a 30-year-old receiver on the long term that's going to hit free agency in a year. Whereas Olave, I mean, Olave's 24 years old. Like, the Saints, maybe they could get to trading him. They would be idiotic to me for them to move him. But sometimes teams do that.
803-0550 to join us. 1-888-550-2550. We've got a couple open phone lines some people are going to get to as well as we roll here. Paul Hamilton, 7:30, and Lindy Ruff at 8. Bill in Tampa. Bill, you going to be in Tampa much longer? You getting out?
Yeah, guys, I'm on the road driving north out of Tampa. So
good to hear.
Yeah, good to hear.
Heading out of town. But, yeah, thanks. Couple points. One, I just want to fact check, make sure you guys are right on Rashee Rice. ESPN reported, Schefter reported, that they were optimistic that he might return. And yeah. On your morning show on WGR before you guys came on, she was also reporting the same thing.
All I saw was expected to miss rest of season. That was from NFL.com, at least.
It's funny, Bill. Schefter, in one report, contradicted himself.
Okay, like, I didn't even see Schefter.
Yeah, there was one. I think the most optimistic timeline is still months, but there's, I don't know. It's been a little odd the way that they've reported this whole thing. So, yeah.
Okay. Got it. Yeah, then I guess my second one, you guys are all over this. You've been all over it from the start with the lack of receiving talent on the Bills. How is it that the Chiefs can plug in these guys? You know, Smith-Schuster, they pick up Kareem Hunt. They plug and play these guys like there's – and they don't miss a beat, yet the Bills pick up – and I blame this on Bean. You know, they go after all these yahoos. MVS can't catch a ball. He should be off the roster. You know, I don't know. I don't have any answers. I'm just curious what your take is. Why the Chiefs can plug and play, and the Bills pick up all these guys who can't seem to catch a pass.
Thanks, Bill.
My answer, Bill, would be the Chiefs aren't as good at it as you think they are. Like, they were good at it last night, but for a calendar year, their offense has not looked right.
They've been chasing it, but my general answer would be that's a franchise that their offensive identity doesn't change every 6 months.
Also that.
And if it does, it's the same guy in charge of it. And the Bills have gone from Dable to Dorsey to Brady, and... You know, what's their offensive identity? It's got to be, well, we need two tight ends because two tight ends are going to be good. And what you did, like the Kincaid pick, you know, there's probably a bigger, more mature film-based conversation with some former GM of, hey, it's a good player, but when you did that, you cratered a tight end that was on your team.
Mm-hmm.
You drafted him over top of Dawson Knox. And, you know, a number one receiver on your team helps your number two receiver quite often. Hey, look what happens when you get a number one. The other guys have all this room to work with. Has Kincaid opened up more opportunities for Knox? Absolutely not. Knox has disappeared. He's gone. He's paid well, and he's gone from this offense. He's gone from game plans. He's completely disappeared. And that was a decision that was a weird one.
Wasn't this kind of predictable a little bit, too? Because weren't there examples of, like, in Philadelphia... There was an example I remember right after they drafted Kincaid.
Ertz and Goddard.
How Goddard really didn't explode until... Well, even
Ertz,
explode.
Ertz
didn't
left.
Really. Yeah, Ertz left, and then Goddard started actually producing.
Right, all these two tight ends are going to do it. It rarely happens that two of them eat. In Baltimore, it happens sometimes, but Andrews being phased out.
Well, in Baltimore, they're taking turns, though. It's never like they're both doing it at the same time, right? Andrews was elite, and Likely was hardly used, and now Likely's playing well, but Andrews is like a ghost.
Barely used, yeah.
So it's very rare that you do get two guys at the same time. I feel like they're just confused on how to use Kincaid. I feel like they don't know how to use him. And that question is not in Kansas City. They have no question of how to use Travis Kelce if they need him, right? Maybe they weren't planning this year to need him as much, which is why they were slow playing it. But you want to know another difference? That's a difference. They have Travis Kelce. They have one weapon you know you can rely upon to some degree. And here, now that Diggs is gone, I don't have that guy. I don't have a guy I know every week
on a Hall of Fame level. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, too.
But even at this stage, I don't even know if they have a guy at his level at this stage of his career, which is not as dynamic of a player that he once was, but you just know you can rely upon him. You need 9 for 70 in a game, he'll give you 9 for 70 in a game.
Yeah. He was great. He looked great last night. He looked 2 years younger. On Rice of the Chiefs, Schefter said, after consulting with doctors, a lot of optimism, he didn't suffer the ACL. I guess it's
the,
like,
LCL.
It's 2% of knee injuries where there's an isolated LCL injury. And if that's the case, then he can come back. It's still unlikely. They're going to find out today. They're going to go in today. This reminds me of when Vaughn tore his ACL, and we thought, maybe not, and they went in and said, yes, actually, he did. So his season is over. So sometimes they're just waiting. They're not ruling it out yet. But even if it's just an isolated LCL, that's still a long time. He's still going to miss a good chunk of time. Andy?
Yeah, because Rappaport said 2025. So maybe you have differing reporters there with different things.
There's like a very outside shot.
Gotcha. Okay.
803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550. Cooper, Adams.
Those are the two. Is there another one?
There are more. I mean, Deontay Johnson's an answer here. I mean, if you just look at expiring contracts and see what teams want to do, you know, the idea of getting a young guy is, I don't know, probably not that likely. This is NHL trade deadline shopping, you know? Well, this guy's a little bit old. Well, his contract's a little bit big. Well, he's had injury issues. You know, you're not going to get a perfect prospect.
I think, to kind of go back to a caller from last hour, maybe we'll get more of a sign that they're willing to do something like that in the next couple of weeks if they start looking at their other internal options. If they actually, someone called in and said, like, hey, why not put KJ Hamler in MVS's spot? See if he could stretch the field for you. Why not play Tyrell Shavers more often? If they start doing that, that might be your first sign that, hey, they're willing to shuffle things around here. They're not happy with the room. And you did get McDermott yesterday, who did say there is concern when asked about the wide receiver room, which, of course, like, how could there not be? But he did say it. So there's concern about the receiver room. If they start shuffling shavers in there a little bit, and they started elevating, hey, KJ Hamler played 15 snaps this week and got a couple of targets. That might be your first sign that they're willing to start listening and thinking about other ideas than just the five guys they walked into the season with.
Let me give you some other names. Joe Biscaglia, The Athletic, had an article suggesting a couple names, and some will be interesting and some will be maybe long shots, but they're names we've heard before, like Cortland Sutton. Wasn't he one okay, that maybe yep. was going to move at the beginning of the season?
Yep.
DeAndre Hopkins, again a name here, but I don't know if he's winning on the outside right now. Christian Kirk.
Also, Denver's 3-2.
Right.
They might not want to take their rookie quarterback's only good weapon.
Romeo Doubs, Darius Slayton.
Doubs is interesting because he's actually into it with his team right now about his role.
You want a really good name that I like? Here's the name I like maybe the most. I don't know, all the cap hit and stuff, but
okay.
The other Vegas receiver, Jacoby Myers.
Love that player.
He's good.
Yeah. He's a slot guy, though.
True. They don't need
him. That's kind of what keep. Like, I think Thielen is going to get traded out of Carolina, and he's slot at this point. So it's like.
Yeah, I need somebody that can get open on the outside.
I need someone that can get open on the outside. That's really it.
803-0550. On the Bills, and Sabres, too, if you want. I mean, 7:30, we got a conversation with Paul on what happened in Prague and their prospects moving forward. James Reimer claimed on waivers by Anaheim. So their third-string goalie is, I don't know, Felix
Sandstrom. Felix Sandstrom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jimmy in Miami. Hey, Jimmy.
Hey guys. Good morning. Hey, Jeremy, you said something interesting when talking about Josh Allen. You said, what have they done to our boy? And I'll tell you what they've done to our boy. They've turned him into a system quarterback. They've turned him into Daniel Jones or Gardner Minshew. I mean, with all the running that we do in the offense, and I don't mind running, but I mean, it's almost like it's overdone to a point right now where all these little bubble screens now and little side out passes, like you say, those are almost like runs. Also,
those are those might as well be extensions of the run game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there are 31 other teams in the NFL that would take Josh Allen. I mean, we have a freakishly talented quarterback, and you guys don't have to tell you what he's done. The way he runs from sideline to sideline, take out of bounds, and he throws a bullet 30 yards downfield to hit a receiver. And we're turning him into a system quarterback. Now, the other thing, if I could just say one other thing, the thing that really drives me crazy, and I don't want to give you guys history lessons because you guys already know. In 2020 and 21, we had the most electric offense on the field that any team could ever put together. And the receiving core we had was amazing. Of course, Dable was calling the plays. For some reason, we saw a need to drift away from that identity. I know we drafted defense in 21 and in 22, and some of those were really whiffs. When talented receivers were available, I'm talking about first-round elite receivers were available in the draft. We drifted away from that. And the thing that drives me crazy is I just don't understand why we took something like that was a proven success. It seemed like the turning point was the 13-second game when we went toe-to-toe with Kansas City on every play. And then all of a sudden, it was like going in another direction. And the other thing that's crazy is during those years, the mantra, everyone eats, everyone was eating. I mean, I don't get it. Diggs was eating more than everyone else, but not to a point where, I mean, I think Beasley had 1,000 yards one year. The next year he had like 800. Emmanuel Sanders was getting a lot of targets. Gabe Davis, I remember he had a couple of years where he had 500-600 yards. And for a rookie coming in, that was pretty good. So nobody was complaining, and nobody was complaining when Gabe Davis caught 4 touchdown passes against Kansas City in the 13-second game. So I never understood this everyone eats thing, I mean, everyone should eat, but you really need one guy that should eat more than everyone else. So, but that's all I had. And the other thing with Kincaid, I mean, really, couldn't Quentin Morris do or Knox do what we're asking Kincaid to do? I mean, I'm like you guys. I don't understand why we drafted Kincaid. And I think Knox could catch one of those little bubble screens and run for 5-6 yards. I know Quentin Morris certainly can. He caught a touchdown pass last year, so it's not like he can't catch the ball.
Yeah.
That's all I had, guys.
Thanks, Jimmy. There are a couple reps for Kincaid. Again, like, so much of this gets down to, this is how I generally operate. I'm not mad at any of the individual players. I mean, they don't put together the group. Am I mad at MVS for being MVS? Am I mad at Matt Collins for being Matt Collins? With the case of Kincaid, there are a couple reps where they're trying to throw those screens to Curtis Samuel. There was one that Ian Harditz tweeted out, and he got blown up.
Kincaid did?
Yes. Because he's not a guy that's known to be a great blocker. Sometimes that's the run game. Sometimes that's, hey, we're throwing a screen out to Curtis Samuel, and Kincaid got run over.
That should be out there, though. That to me should be pretty bad. That usually is tight end against defensive back.
This was a tight end maybe against a linebacker. Okay. If it was a defensive back, I mean, I watched the All-22, and he got blown up. And there's,
well, that is part of it. Wasn't him being a tight end and 12 personnel and matchup problems, like, the blocking was always mentioned as a part of that, right? Part of your matchup problems are he's going to be blocking a defensive back. Maybe in this one it was a linebacker, but if he's not giving you that either, which, right, I don't know on the grand scope of things if we're seeing too much of that, just all kind of gets filed under, I don't know if they know how to use him.
Right.
I also don't know how good he is in the first place. Is he a great player? Is he an elite tight end? Is he just pretty good? You know, because there are a lot of first-round tight ends in the last 10 years. They're just pretty good. Evan Engram, right? Evan Engram was like a highly touted, athletic, first-round tight end.
T.J. Hockenson.
He's pretty good. Mm-hmm. He's not Kelsey. He's not like an elite. But he's pretty good. Hockenson, same thing, yeah.
Freiermuth.
Yeah, is that Kincaid?
I don't know.
Because that's not matchup nightmare. That is a pretty good tight end that's going to be on your team for a while. And I don't know if that's enough. I think they might need him to be more than that.
803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550. What your thought is on, you know, the mess the Bills are in. They play the Jets Monday Night Football.
They're a mess.
They are a mess.
They're going to be better off if they get Adams, though.
They probably will.
I heard a good breakdown on the Jets. Mina Kimes yesterday was like their whole, or actually it was Dan Orlovsky maybe, their whole offense is basically designed on chemistry between the quarterback and the receiver. Like, there's no scheme.
And
there's
the quarterback skipped a bunch of mini camps and OTAs.
Yep. The quarterback doesn't want to do motion, right? They're like last in the league in motion because Rodgers doesn't like it. They don't do a lot of play action. Like, they're not really doing any of the stuff that other offenses in the league are doing. And they can't protect Rodgers. Rodgers has the lowest time to throw in the league I saw since 2010. Like, he's getting the ball out lightning quick. And if that's your offense, then right, why is the ball going to Alan Lazard every play? Because Alan Lazard's the only guy that's played with Aaron Rodgers for multiple seasons.
The number of times you should check the targets to Garrett Wilson. I saw.
Because that went up.
Oh, yeah. He targeted Wilson 20 times, maybe, in this game against Minnesota.
No, it was that much?
Yes, it was that much. Because this is actually, you know, the whole everybody eats versus too focused on one guy. Rodgers.
Oh, my goodness. He had 22 targets.
22 targets. Yeah.
He's for 101 yards. It's not even that. That's not even that efficient.
That's the point. That's actually a real example of you're doing too much to one guy and it's not working. You can force 20 targets to a receiver if he's got like 9 yards per play.
Right.
But they are not doing well in getting the ball to Garrett Wilson. And I saw that game they played in London, Rodgers targeting Wilson was like the second lowest efficiency targeting a receiver in the last 5-6 years or whatever.
Yeah.
And the other one was Rodgers targeting Davante Adams.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah.
That Rodgers, when it's not going well, subscribes to, let me keep feeding my guy.
You could actually file Lazard under that too. So Wilson's a better example of it. In that game in London, Lazard had 10 targets. He had 34 yards.
Yeah. So if the Bills are able to take away one guy or both guys, right? Can Benford and Douglas do the job? Probably.
Yeah, I think so.
I might have to worry about Breece Hall, I guess. Braylon Allen might be a little bit concerning. I mean, he's pretty good as a rookie running back.
Breece Hall's had a horrible season
so far.
Yes, he has.
So horrible. I'm not too worried about the Jets, to be totally honest. I think the game could be ugly.
I kind of want the under.
Like a usual Jet game, 13-10.
What should the over-under in that game be? Because so far today we've talked about how bad the Jets' offense looks and how good their defense is, pass defense. Yeah. So what type of game script am I getting?
The over-under in the Jets-Bills game should be 36.5.
36.5. It's 41.5. You know what that means?
Take the under.
You should bet the under.
I mean, It's these games are always ugly. They were ugly before Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah,
and
except the last one. For the Bills, that's right. They've had one great performance on offense against the Jets. The Jets, though, defensively, I guess is kind of true. They were in a free fall by the time the Bills just destroyed them.
Dennis in Williamsville. Hey, Dennis. Good morning.
Hey, guys. So, I guess I got two things. Number one, I guess we'll just start with defense. I thought that we brought in Mike Edwards to be maybe a starting safety. And I know he was hurt at the beginning of the year. I don't know if he's, like, still on the injury report or whatever, but, I mean, it seems like he is way down the list. I mean, having Cole Bishop coming in and playing over him, I don't know. He must not be doing too well.
Yeah, if you think about, Dennis, maybe it was Sal or Extra Point Show, the free agent class overall for the Bills, they're not getting no help. They're getting no help. Who are the free agents they signed?
Receiver, Hollins and MVS, and that's nothing.
And Curtis Samuel.
And Samuel was the big one, and that's right. Nothing.
That's nothing. Mike Edwards. You got some defensive tackle depth in there.
But not really. The guys that are performing at defensive tackle are actually DaQuan Jones, who they re-signed, and then Dwayne Carter, who's a rookie.
Who looks very good.
Yeah, there's nothing. Who's their best free agent? Who even's number one? Anybody? Is there an answer? There might not be an answer. I'm asking because there might not actually be an answer. Maybe it is, right? Is it Austin Johnson? Actually, not even him, because weren't we wondering if he was going to get cut last week?
Yeah. It's Keith.
I don't know.
Is it Nicholas Morrow?
Oh, he played like 10 snaps. He was horrible. I don't think they have a single.
Is it Keaton Bills?
Still just for the mental of it. Yeah. Like Edwards, it also depends like what you even thought of him. Edwards has played 78 games in the league. You know how many he's started? 28. It's not like he's a mainstay starting safety in the league. He started some games. He started 5 games last year for the Chiefs, 12 the year before that in Tampa. He's a veteran, you know, so he was expected to plug and play, but he wasn't like a star in the league, even close to it. I mean, the way Bishop played on Sunday, though, this caller brings up Edwards. I'll tell you, I've thought more this week about Micah Hyde than I have all season and what he's doing right now.
Yeah. 803-0550. Thanks, Dennis. 1-888-550-2550. Was it Dennis we just took? Or is Dennis on hold? I'm losing track. All right. Thanks, Dennis. We did take him.
We got to get to Paul anyway. So.
Yes, we do. Paul Hamilton recapping Prague and what the Sabres looked like in their first 2 games, both losses. Good news, everybody. Who started 0-2 last year in the NHL?
The Panthers.
And?
The Oilers.
Yes.
The Oilers. I was trying to remember who was in the Cup.
Here comes the Cup run. Those two teams both started 0-2. It's the formula. Blueprint. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college. It's the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Get to Paul Hamilton. Let's see what he thinks about that final series of 3 plays for the Bills and the Texans. And also, if you missed, the Sabres played a pair of afternoon and morning games overseas. They were forgettable. We'll see what the takeaways are. Paul Hamilton, his appearance brought to you by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. How are you?
Paul, what was more disappointing to you, the Sabres' pair of games in Prague or the Bills' final series against Houston?
Tough one.
They both had their moments, eh? Probably the Bills. I mean, just the fact that in different types of situations, it just keeps happening over and over again at the end of games. And then afterwards, we're going to learn. You know, it's a learning experience. And could maybe just there maybe be the end of a game when there are situations like that where you get it right once instead of having no idea what to do and then going, all right, we're going to learn. And then we learn. It's like, okay. Maybe figure it out during the week in practice and go over certain situations and be ready to go and, you know, have your middle linebacker ready to go on the field, you know, for the last, you know, maybe discuss on the sideline that, okay, if we don't get a first down here, we have to, you know, punt the ball. This is going to be the situation. This is going to be the defense we put out there and have everybody ready to go on the field. Instead of you having your middle linebacker out there going, what are we doing? And not knowing what we're doing when you're snapping the ball when you're in a defense that's preventing a Hail Mary instead of, you know.
One play for a field goal. Yeah.
Yeah. So, it was just, you know, it just boggles my mind that these things just keep popping up in different ways. And then, all right, well, now we'll be ready next time.
Yeah. Well, Paul, that said, you know, the Sabres fans might feel that you were talking about not about, you know, a Bills possession, but a Sabres season, that a lot of them seem to go the same way. And I know you know that fans are really quick to jump on, here we go again. So from the pair of games in Prague, losses to the Devils that were very – blah, and they suffered some injuries. Is there a silver lining that you saw? Tell us how the games went and what Lindy Ruff might want to get going differently as they start the season at home on Thursday.
Well, from a fan standpoint, probably the worst thing the Sabres could have done in those two games was exactly what they did, lose like they did last year. If you go out, lose 5-4, have a great game back and forth, everybody's playing well, you know, maybe you do make a few mistakes or whatever, you know, maybe it's a little different story. But to go there and lose basically exactly like you've been losing the last couple of years, or last year in particular, it's just, you know, I don't think the fans have an appetite at all for that. Everybody knows what happened last year between the fans and the team, and, you know, unfortunately I think they've put themselves in a spot where Thursday they'll first mistake, it winds up in your net. I think it's probably going to be pretty bad. You know, we know how it got last year. And that's the problem. And I have an idea, I think, what went down here. A lot of it, first of all, take a look at the three preseason games. You had basically played two AHL teams and the German team. I don't even know if they could have competed in the East Coast League. You know, so I think you gave yourself a false sense of, now this, I'm not blaming the Sabres for who they played, that they got to play who this on the schedule. And the other teams aren't going to have an NHL team against them that early in preseason. They're just not. So circumstances are what hit them. So I think they got a false sense of security. They did go out there and play the way Lindy Ruff wanted them to, and they went out and won all three games handily. Well, next thing you know, here come the New Jersey Devils, who are a fast team, and here they come. And you haven't played an NHL team, and all of a sudden the Devils are all over you, and it's like, uh-oh, and what did you do? You reverted right back to what you know. And what you know is how you played last year.
Yeah.
You were tentative. That was the biggest thing. They just looked like, you know, uh-oh, and they got tentative. And you can't play hockey tentatively. If you're sitting back and letting the other team come to you, look out. And that's exactly what the Devils did. But, you know, the power play was just horrendous. They were 0-for-6. They couldn't even get the puck in the zone except for maybe the last power play on Friday, during Friday's game. I thought that was a pretty good power play. But they can't get into the zone. They weren't competing hard. They weren't winning battles. And it was just like the Devils lined up, and the Sabres said, okay, we're going to skate through you. And the Devils lined up, and the Sabres said, we're going to skate through you. And it was like rinse and repeat. And, you know, they never tried to get the puck in deep and tried to win battles and do those types of things. So now you go 0-for-6 on your power play. And basically, the type of hockey they have to play was pretty simple. The goal on Saturday, where the whole line attacked the net and just kept digging and digging, and they weren't going to let Allen
freeze that puck. And Thompson put it in the net. Greenway was going crazy as far as, you know, digging underneath him with his stick to get that puck loose. They were successful. And if that's what Lindy Ruff is looking for, get people around the net, get pucks to the net, and win battles. He should be playing that goal nonstop for them all week long. It's like this: if you do this and play like this, you will win hockey games, and you will score goals. So, you know, that's what they can build on, is something like that. Is okay, you know, this is the way we need to play from this point forward, and just get that out of their system, whatever we saw for those two games, because it certainly wasn't good.
On Saturday, Paul, one of the bright spots, Devin Levi, looking pretty sharp until at least that wraparound goal in the third period, maybe a little too aggressive, but not to say that they're going to, you know, start him on Thursday, I don't think, but that's probably one of the lone bright spots, I would think, from the weekend.
I agree. Yeah, it probably could have been 6-1 or worse if he didn't play as well as he did. So, you know, that was great that they got good goaltending like that. And, you know, at the other end, I mean, Jake Allen, he really stood there. I don't think he had a difficult save the whole time. He basically stopped the pucks that came at him. He saw everything. And the one time he got caught out of the net, then there was a scramble. Tuck got the puck with a wide open net and a defenseman trying to scramble to get in there, and he hit the post. And that was another thing. In both games, they had wide open nets, and they didn't score on either one of them. You score on both those, maybe that turns both those games around. You know, Abe Cabell in the first game, he's basically standing in the crease. Take that puck and rip it so hard that you rip the twine and it goes right through the net and to the back wall. But he babied it, and that allowed Markstrom to get the paddle of his stick back and make a save. And, you know, Tuck gets the puck, and again, wide open net, and he hits the post with it. I mean, you got to bury those. You got to bear down, and you have to bury those. Those could have maybe been big goals. Maybe that lifts the team, and you start getting to the game that Lindy Ruff wants you to get to, and maybe it changes the whole complexion of the game. Yeah, but yet, two wide open nets. Allen was nowhere to be found. It was defensemen trying to scramble into the crease, and they hit the post. You got to bury those.
Paul Hamilton on the Wester Hotline as we chat about the Sabres, who have their season opener at KeyBank Center, at least their home opener, Thursday against the LA Kings. And, Paul, the early portion of the schedule has, you know, I guess an opportunity to try and build a little bit of faith here. You know, I want to ask you, like, will it happen? But is the good news that it's not like they played their best and lost. There's definitely going to be another level that they've got to find, they've got to unlock, but they can play an awful lot better than they did.
Oh, sure they can. I don't think they can play much worse, to be quite honest with you. And you've got an opportunity in the schedule here. You know, well, you got the Stanley Cup champions on Saturday, but you do have the LA Kings on Thursday. Then you go on the road and play Pittsburgh, Columbus, and Chicago. I don't know. If you play the way Lindy Ruff wants you to play, I think you have an opportunity to win all three games.
Those are the three teams they had more wins than last year.
Yeah. I mean, the schedule now gives you an opportunity to maybe turn this around rather quickly. But if you played like you did on Friday, Saturday, you'll be lucky if you win one of them. And the good thing about it is, too, with the collective bargaining, the Sabres don't have to do what Ottawa had to do and other teams that were over there a couple of years ago, where they basically came back to North America and had to play right away.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the Sabres weren't even allowed to practice yesterday with due to the collective bargaining agreement. And they still have time. I mean, they still have Tuesday and Wednesday. I mean, if players wanted to go on the ice, that was up to them. But, you know, they couldn't, like, have a formal practice or anything like that. So, you know, it gives them a chance to reorient, get back here, reorient. You're gone for, what, 10 days, 11 days, whatever it was. You got family obligations to take care of. you got to get used to the time change and being back here and everything. So I like the fact that the collective bargaining agreement gives both teams a chance now to reorient before they have to play another game.
Paul Hamilton, his appearance brought to you by Railax Honda. Railax, we got this. Thanks, Paul.
Okay.
One odd scheduling quirk in the NHL, as Paul mentions, like the CBA there has, where the Sabres are mandated time off. The NHL schedule, Joe, does not have a day between the preseason and the regular season. If you go to the schedule of games, there are games today.
Yeah.
And games tomorrow.
Preseason games.
Yep. And then Thursday starts the season. There's not one day in between. It's
right.
Preseason Wednesday and regular season Thursday.
All right. Assuming some...
Or, I'm sorry.
No team, I'm assuming, would have a preseason game Wednesday and then a regular season game Thursday.
Preseason Tuesday. Regular.
Okay.
If I've got this right, the point is there's no gap to say, hey, the season is real now. They're just playing games every day leading up to it.
You just go right into it.
Yep. A little weird. 803-0550, Sabres head coach Lindy Ruff, top of the hour here on WGR.
Let TRS Heating and Air Conditioning intercept your heating bills. Enter now WGR550.com. Chance to win $1,200 towards your home heating costs. Contest ends January 5th. TRS Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical Excellence, powering tomorrow, comforting today.
Okay. So Eric writes in, the NHL season starts today. Are there also preseason games today?
This is part of the confusion.
Right.
By the NHL.
When I clicked on it, I had a preseason icon. It's part of my point.
All right, let me do this. Let me go to my fantasy hockey league. And they should not include preseason games. If I go to my team.
Because yesterday's game between Nashville and Tampa was canceled. Three games today.
Yeah, Florida and Boston is one of them.
Okay. Thank you.
Boston at Florida, though. Is that game postponed because of the hurricane? I don't know.
That's not Tampa area. That's Miami.
All right, it's south. They're supposed to get really bad winds, but not like near what the
Chicago,
rest of the state's
Utah,
getting.
St. Louis, Seattle. That is a 4:30 Eastern game. Seattle hockey at 1:30 today? Okay.
Well.
Thank you for the clarification. Part
All
of
right,
my
so
point,
we have NHL hockey today.
Today.
Let's go.
Quick thought for you. Hey, if Dalton Kincaid is going to become a Travis Kelce type player, we're going to need some laterals.
Yeah.
He's got to start lateraling. That's it.
He a lot of laterals.
Take it upon himself. And just say, you know, trying to be like one of the greatest of all time here. Another lateral from Kelce last night.
More laterals in the league this year than I can ever remember, also. They've been called laterals. The Lions had one earlier in the year. The Lions actually had one against them, I think, the next week that somebody called. I doubt the Bills will have one. Over, under, half a lateral for the Bills rest of the season. Under?
I'll take the over.
Really? Doesn't that kind of feel like the thing that Sean McDermott would really hate?
Put it on the bet board.
You want to bet it?
Yeah, Josh is going to lateral. Somebody's going to lateral this year.
On purpose.
Yes. There is going to be a lateral.
Can I make one distinction? It can't be like 1 second left in the game. They got to go 90 yards and they're down six.
Sure. Unless they
it's got to be in like if a they, real.
If they do that and win, though, I think that should count.
It's got to be a real game situation.
I think Joe's right. It has to be a non. You know,
no zeros on the clock.
Win percentage above 10%.
Yeah, I can give you more than that a little bit.
2%.
Because if they run a hook and ladder, you know, that's a design play. Not like, this is the game.
All right, I'm excited.
I'll put it on the board.
We officially have a lateral bet.
We have a lateral bet.
$10.
What's got to come off there? We got to get that Alex Tuck next Sabres captain off the board, because that's not happening.
That's right.
Bean says wide receiver train. Did we already pay that one out?
I'm not paying that out. He's going to say it next offseason.
Is that just open-ended? We never put a time
on it. He's going to say it.
McDermott to have a bottom 10 defense. Going to be up there a while. Terry Pegula refers to McDermott as the best coach in the NFL. He doesn't really talk much, so that's going to be up there a while.
All right.
There, Bills receivers to make the team. I'll erase that. This should be gone already.
Yeah. 803-0550 to join us. Sabres head coach Lindy Ruff when we return.